like to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this morning. We have one case that's going to be argued. And before we begin, I want to introduce the members of the panel. To my right is Justice Lee Gabriel. To my left is Justice Elizabeth Kerr, and I'm Justice Bonnie Sutterth. Before we begin, would the clerk please call the case?
The court will now call Jacob Ryan Dam versus the state of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. David Pearson will argue for the appellant. Mr. Landon Wade will argue for the state.
May it please the court, I'm David Pearson from Fort Worth here on behalf of the appellant Jacob Dam. It's an honor to appear before this court and an honor to join these issues with my opponent, Mr. Wade. My focus this morning is on point of error number one, in as much as that's the point I am most attempting to take a hill and plant a flag, if you will. The core right implicated in point of error number one is the Fifth Amendment. Here we have in this case a well-developed record, and the case law, Wilkerson, is both sides I think agree it's a central case. There's no argument about what the case means. The question this appeal boils down to in point of error number one is, in taking a statement from Mr. Dam, did a CPS investigator, Mr. Gary Hill, and you'll hear his name mentioned in the course of my statements, did Mr. Gary Hill, the CPS investigator, converge his investigation with the police investigation such that Mr. Dam's privilege against self-incrimination was not adhered to? Now, the investigator, Mr. Hill, it's not disputed that he was obviously working for CPS. It's not disputed that Mr. Dam was in custody. It's not disputed that his statement, had it been taken by a police officer, would have implicated Miranda. And the state is not disputing that Miranda was not given. It was custodial. It was obviously incriminating, and it was... Therefore, on those factors, it would not be admissible in court had it been taken by the police officer. So the Wilkerson case tells us that if the agent has become an agent for law enforcement, then Miranda and 3822 safeguards must be adhered to secure the privilege against self-incrimination. They do apply to law enforcement or their agents. And this is right out of Wilkerson in the brief. If the once parallel paths of CPS and the police converge, and I submit that word is important, converge, and the police and the state agent are investigating the criminal offense in tandem, then Miranda warnings and 3822 compliance may be necessary. Now, Wilkerson tells us the test requires a review of the entire record. Central to that determination are the actions and perceptions of the parties involved: the police, the CPS worker, and the defendant himself. So that's where the focus is, on the actions and perceptions. Now, the burden is on the appellant under Wilkerson to prove that the CPS investigator was acting as an agent of the law. Before I get to my main point, I do want to take an aside to address something that was mentioned in the state's brief. They were pretty emphatic, the state, that somehow my client, Mr. Dam, is claiming standing for the Taylor Varan. And let me back up. I didn't set this up very well. The CPS agent, Mr. Hill, went into an interview with the wife of the defendant, Taylor Varan, I think on December 12, 2012, and had a long interview with her. And we'll talk about that in a moment. Then he went back 7 days or 7.5 days later and spoke to Mr. Dam. And the state and the damage, if you will, is done in the interview with Taylor Varan. That is the wife of the defendant.
Were they actually married at the time?
Well, they were common law. I stand correct. They were common law. He said in an interview that they were common law married. So I take it.
But applied for a marriage license thereafter.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. Of course, I'm not claiming any privilege here or getting into those issues as far as I know. But we are not attempting to vicariously say that the harm here is because Taylor Varan's privileging and self-incrimination was impacted. That may be the case for another day in another court. It's not my concern. I'm not saying that at all. Here's what I'm trying to say. If a defendant proves that a particular person is, in fact, working on behalf of the police, then Wilkerson is impacted or is applied. And then Wilkerson says, it's sometimes difficult to determine whether the two paths have converged, that of the police and the CPS, and whether they are parallel, whether they have converged in a particular case. That's important. Have they converged in a particular case? The review calls for you, the court to look at the relationship between the police and the potential agent and then to examine the record concerning the interviewer's actions and perceptions and then to consider the evidence of the record of the defendant's perceptions. I've never, in not that I've done dozens and dozens of arguments, but I've never in my career thought about thinking outside the box and asking the court, just watch Court's Exhibit Number 6 and read Wilkerson and I'm good with your decision, be whatever it may be. That this record about remember Wilkerson says, does the defendant prove that a particular person, not a particular interview, but a particular person, has he become an agent? I would submit to the court that Mr. Gary Hill, the CPS investigator, if you watch Court's Exhibit Number 6, has become a full-fledged agent for Detective Murphy of the U.S. Police Department.
They don't really deny that he was acting as an agent when he did his interview of Taylor Varan, do they? But you talk about the important language is, did the paths converge? Then they can diverge, too, can't they?
I think at a theoretical point, Your Honor, that's correct. I would submit that in these circumstances, that when they've converged to this degree, it is more rational to find that they're converged for all purposes. For this particular case, it was.
Even though they had found the body, they had basically quit investigating that case. And in fact, they had prohibited Mr. Hill from talking to Mr. Dam on the 12th. They said, you can't talk to him. Right?
They did say that, and that's, I can see why as an investigator you don't want to, that's your target suspect that you have in custody. You do not want to, you don't want to take any chance of there being a Miranda violation in that situation. I accept what you're stating, and the trial court made the same statement in volume 9 where he explains his rationale for these findings that Mr. Dam is somehow suggesting that for the rest of his career, Mr. Hill is an agent for the state. I mean, an agent for the police department. But I mean, in Court's Exhibit Number 6, I hope the court can see, and even though they conceded it, as you say, he couldn't have been more full-on cop in that interview than Detective Sipowicz in NYPD Blue. I mean, he was... In the interview of Taylor Varan. But
in the interview of Mr. Dam, he's telling Mr. Dam, don't tell me these things. Tell the detective I could be subpoenaed. Things that in fact, diverged him from being an agent of the police.
Well,
was he not?
That is a reasonable deduction. And another reasonable deduction, if I could be a little bit more cynical and be an advocate here for Mr. Dam, another deduction is, he said, Mr. Dam had invoked Miranda a couple of times. He had invoked his right to counsel and stopped talking a couple of times. And Mr. Hill knew, he had conversations, obviously, with Detective Murphy, because he told Taylor Varan, the cell phone data alone puts Jacob Dam with the victim when she disappeared. They were together. We know from their phones, and her phone stopped at that point when they were together. He had inside information. He also was standing there. Detective Murphy was in the interview room before the Taylor Varan interview, and I'm sorry to keep going back to that, but Mr. Hill, when he is a veteran investigator, he says that in his background. And when he tells Jacob Dam, I don't have to give you Miranda. I'm sorry, as a cynic or as an advocate, I find it a little bit incredible that Mr. Hill and Detective Murphy are saying we don't remember any conversations where we talked about the cell phone data. We don't remember this at all. They're talking about, they're both saying that they don't remember a conversation they had about whether a body was in a shallow grave somewhere in Tarrant County.
But isn't that a credibility issue, not for us to decide?
Well, as you frame it, the way you frame it, Your Honor, I would have to concede that. But the big picture here that you take a sports analogy, you take a baseball team, like the Rangers season's about to start. They're playing the Astros in a series, and the general manager already knows he's going to trade Cole Hamels, the best pitcher for the Rangers. He doesn't trade him in the beginning of the three-game series because he knows that as soon as Cole Hamels changes dugouts in the middle of the series, he can tell every batter what every pitcher, his approach from every pitcher the Rangers have. He can tell that batter, this guy's going to expect you to chase high balls. He's going to throw high, and then he's going to come down and in. You just wouldn't do that. Well, Mr. Hill had become to the point, he's so full-on detective that I find it to be a shallow supposition that, oh, I'm just CPS, I don't have to give you Miranda. And the trial court says he's almost a victim of this unwanted confession. But his pathway had so converged that he's contaminated by this point. I find it as a cynic and as an advocate, I find it to be more incredible that he's just in there not realizing that if Mr. Dam starts talking about this case, that he's going to get some very, very interesting, very incriminating statements from Mr. Dam.
So he's just supposed to abdicate his responsibility to go in there and interview this gentleman about his, or this individual about his children, because he had an interview with somebody else 7 days before that. And in the meantime, the body has been found.
Well, that's on the trial court, Your Honor. He doesn't have to advocate his responsibility, but we're talking about whether the trial court made the right decision on whether or not this was admissible. In other words, he could still go in there and talk to him about relative placement for the children and all that, but once the statement turns, he is so in bed, if you will, with the detective about this investigation, where he's saying things to Taylor Dam like, oh, your child will be... he'll live half his life while you're away for 3 years. Termination will be the only thing. You have to... He starts the conversation. He initiates it. That's what I guess I'm trying to say. He, without her saying, what do I need to do in the situation? He says, you need to roll on Jacob Dam. That's what you need to do. You need to think... You may need to make a choice between... I won't say the name of the child, but you need to make a choice between your child and Jacob. You need to make a choice. He couldn't have been more of a role player there for the police. And of course, the minute markers, and I don't think in my brief, quite frankly, that I underscored this enough, why I think her interview is important and the way the record goes on and on and on. And the minute markers suggested by the trial attorney in the eighth volume when they fleshed out this motion, he suggests listening at about 32 minutes to 52 minutes, and I suggest also 15 minutes to 17 minutes of this interview. The back to the language in Wilkerson, the Court of Criminal Appeals does say the once parallel paths, when they have converged, they're once parallel, and it doesn't say that. How it doesn't give a temporal time limit on that. It doesn't say anything. Now, I do think what the trial court said is a little bit of a straw man argument that, well, once they've converged, they're always converged. I'm not saying that. But Wilkerson does say once the parallel paths have converged, and it does talk about in this particular case, and the state doesn't give you a case, and the judge didn't give a case or didn't give it. He was saying that I think the state, along with the trial court, puts a lot of weight on the fact that this is another conversation 7 days later. And I grant what you said, Justice Gabriel, about they had found the body. I grant you that. But there's a lot of weight put on the fact that this is a different conversation on a different day, and he's this victim of this unwanted confession. But the Court of Criminal Appeals never says that. The Court of Criminal Appeals never says, has to a particular discussion or has to a particular interview. It says has to a particular case. And I do think allowing this severe record to uphold this to not sustain point of error number one with this severe of a record, where you got 20 minutes of a CPS investigator, full-on Detective Sipowicz, you've got to roll on him. You've got to think about your child. Letting this stand does damage to our Constitution, does damage to the Fifth Amendment. And I'll defer or yield to the state.
With regard to appellant's first point of error, he would have this court hold that his CPS interview was inadmissible based on what occurred in a completely different interview with another person at a different time and under entirely different circumstances. And our position is that that's just too far of a stretch. And instead, this court should evaluate the admissibility of appellant's CPS interview separately and apart from the interview between Special Investigator Hill and Taylor Varan. And while the state didn't find a case that lines up exactly with what happened here, I think that's because this is kind of it's a strange factual scenario. But I think if you look at the language of Wilkerson, that case contemplates a situation-by-situation, interview-by-interview analysis.
What do you say, though, about the language that opposing counsel points out, that it's when the parallel paths converge in this particular case, not as to this particular witness or this particular individual?
Well, I think if you look at, yeah, I do agree that it does say that when parallel paths converge, but I think it talks about, you know, looking at the context of that, it contemplates the convergence at the time of the interview that's at issue. And I think if we look here at the relevant factors of Wilkerson, that at the time this interview happened, that CPS and law enforcement had not converged as to that interview. Looking at the relationship between the first factor, the relationship between Hill and Murphree, Hill wasn't engaging in any conduct at Murphree's request. He didn't ask Hill to get any information from him. Justice Gabriel, as you mentioned, his investigation was pretty much complete at that point. He didn't have a need to get any information. And looking at the second factor, the CPS investigator's actions and perceptions, he subjectively believed he was acting in his capacity as a CPS investigator and not as law enforcement. And the way that he was conducting his interview seems to back that up. He said his function as a member of the drug endangered children's unit was to interview the perpetrator and to ask about their social background, their social history, and then talk about the allegations in relation to the safety of the children. And that's what he did. In fact, the allegations weren't even brought up until, I think, if I remember correctly, about halfway through the interview. And at that point, he wasn't interrogating the appellant. The appellant basically volunteered the information about the offense. And looking at the third factor, the defendant's perception about his interaction with Hill, Hill explicitly told the appellant he was with CPS. And he appeared to show him his credentials. And again, as Justice Gabriel mentioned, you know, he told him he could be subpoenaed. And when appellant started talking about the allegations, you know, Hill began to kind of deflect and said, hey, you don't need to tell me about that. You need to tell law enforcement, which served to distinguish him from law enforcement, you know, yet again. So I don't think any reasonable person in appellant's position would have thought that Hill was an agent of law enforcement at that point. And the state's position is that, you know, that the even if we were to assume that in the first interview that the law enforcement and CPS had converged at that point, I believe they can, you know, diverge, and at this point they were not, you know, they were not in cahoots, as Wilkerson says.
Prior to this interview with Mr. Hill, Mr. Dam had asserted his right to counsel when talking to law enforcement, correct?
Yes.
So would it be reasonable to assume that if he thought Mr. Hill was law enforcement, he would once again have asserted his right to counsel?
I think that's a good point. And again, when Hill came in at first, you know, you hear him say, I'm with CPS. And I think they'll actually ask him, are you CPS? And he says, yes. And so I believe that that's a correct assumption. And again, I think if the court looks at each of these Wilkerson factors and considers this interview and the circumstances surrounding that interview, the one that's being contested, that each of those factors weighs in the state's favor and supports the trial court's conclusion that appellant's CPS interview was admissible. And again, I want to go back to the state's standing argument in the brief. That was essentially a signal to the court that any problem that appellant has with this interview is not anything that affected his personal rights. It's something that affected, as he claimed, somebody, an entirely different person's rights, Fifth Amendment rights. And as for the rest of the appellant's points of error, the state will rely on its brief, and unless the panel has any further questions, the state will conclude and respectfully ask that this court affirm appellant's conviction.
Thank you.
May it please the court, just briefly, as to the it was called out, and of course reasonably called out, that it's a trial court decision, the credibility of the witnesses. I do want to point out, it's pointed out in the brief, that the state actually filed a Brady notice. Neither Mr. Hill nor Detective Murphy remembered this conversation, but in 2016, the state had verified by Brady notice that the statement had been made to them that Detective Murphy did speak to Mr. Hill to go in there and talk to Taylor Baran and try to find out where the body is. And the trial court even said in his comments on his rationale in Volume 9 that's understandable. You can see why there's a family here that has a missing daughter, a missing a friend, a missing loved one. You can understand why the detective would want anybody that can help, anybody and everybody that can help. But I think that rationale sort of belies the later rationale and makes my point that we recognize from those comments that the trial court had in his mind that he can understand why they had made an agent of Gary Hill.
But is there anything in that Brady notice that Mr. Murphy asked Mr. Hill to go in and talk to Mr. Dam?
No, there's not, and I'm not suggesting that. I do want to briefly touch upon, finally, and I feel like we're sort of talking in circles around this, I am in no way saying that the Wilkerson factors that need to be reviewed here have anything to do with Taylor Baran's Fifth Amendment rights. I'm using her interview as the particular circumstance. The case talks about the circumstances. In these circumstances, Agent Hill, if you will, Gary Hill, has joined the team. He has full-on joined the team. And this is not a different set of circumstances later. I realize the body's been found. That is a particular factor, if you will. But we're still talking about how the unfortunate Miss Egbers wound up in a shallow grave in Kennedale. It's the same circumstances. And Mr. Hill, 1,000 or 10,000 other CPS workers could have gone in there, or he could have gone in there and kept the conversation off of that. And I'm sorry.
You have given us who are old enough to remember Detective Sipowicz a very visual idea of what you think that the first interrogation was like. Is it your position that the interrogation or the conversation with Mr. Hill was an interrogation of that manner? Of Mr. Dam by Mr. Hill, excuse me.
No. I'm saying that from his interview with Mr. No, what I'm saying essentially is in Court's Exhibit Number 6, if you watch his interview with Taylor Varan, you cannot come away from that. It's a powerful, it's impactful, that he is full on trying to help the U.S. Police Department. And in these particular circumstances, as to that particular person having that kind of conversation with Mr. Dam, the Fifth Amendment was impacted, and we pray that this court would reverse that case. And, of course, we stand on the brief as the other points of error. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, your case has been submitted. We